everybody. Welcome back to the Future Frontline podcast. I'm really excited as today I'm joined by Lizzie, who is a psychology student at the University of Leeds. And I will ask her to introduce herself a little bit more to all of us. So thanks for joining, Lizzie. And would you like to tell us, all about who you are and what you do?
Hi Tash, thanks for having me. So my name's Lizzie, I am 25 years old and I'm in my final year studying psychology at the University of Leeds. I'm also currently working as a healthcare assistant in Birmingham where I live, in both general hospitals on COVID wards and in mental health hospitals with children with psychiatric difficulties. I've also done a lot of voluntary experience in outpatient camps, clinics, volunteering for Shout and Childline, and being a youth advisor on different research projects. So yeah, that's me.
Amazing. So much stuff, which we definitely have to delve into a bit later. I'd love to hear about your work as a healthcare assistant. I think that's really interesting. So obviously you reached out to Future Frontline, and we said we'd love to have you on board at the with the rest of the team here. What made you want to get involved with us?
I think this is just such a great platform because I guess I've kind of known since I was younger that I've wanted to work in healthcare. I've never really been entirely sure what I wanted to do. And I think from the outside perspective, like unless you've been a patient yourself, it's really kind of hard to know how like all the teams link together and what the multidisciplinary team is and kind of like what each role is, because they're all sound quite similar, but obviously they're all very different. And I think in order to find out about this information, you'd have to kind of like dig out information on individual roles themselves. But having all of that collated together in one place is just so, so valuable. So I thought I'd come along and help out and give like the psychology perspective.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think even as like healthcare students, we spend, obviously our degrees are all quite intense and lots to learn, but I know, speaking on behalf of myself for medicine, we hardly ever learn about all the other different roles, which makes me feel a bit sad, really.
Definitely. I think it's so hard to work with people if you don't even know what they do. And I mean, I know I've sat in meetings, like when I first started as a healthcare assistant, with people and they'd introduce themselves and their job role and I'd be thinking, what on earth is that? I have no idea what you do. And then I didn't feel like I could ask them questions because I didn't know what they did. So it just changes like the whole dynamic.
I think it's really difficult when you're actually working. You feel almost a bit embarrassed that you don't know what everybody does.
Definitely.
So you obviously chose to study psychology. Could you tell us what made you choose that degree and, you know, what made you choose it over other healthcare degrees maybe?
Sure. So I struggled with my mental health, I guess, a lot throughout my childhood without really realising, but more so as a teenager. I had a really bad patch of mental health and ended up having to go into hospital. And I think it made me really passionate about wanting to learn more about the brain and why it does what it does. And I guess I wanted to help other people because I really believe that mental health is such a pillar of everyone's life, yet it's so poorly understood or educated about. And I think we're doing so much better now in terms of awareness and talking about it. But I think the actual psychological mechanisms of why depression and anxiety occur still aren't really talked about. So I guess I wanted to learn a lot more about that. And in terms of other degrees, I think I've wanted to do everything at some point. Like as a kid, I was absolutely adamant that I wanted to be like a dustbin woman because I'd never seen a woman like emptying our bins or like being a bin collector. And I was adamant that I was going to be like the first dustbin woman who was like female. And that was like my dream. But I kind of grew out of that as a teenager. And then I wanted to be a journalist and then a teacher because my mum was a teacher. And then I think I wanted to be a nurse and that I wanted to be a paediatric nurse. That was kind of what I decided I wanted to do. But then I got ill with my own physical health problems as well. And I knew how intense and demanding nursing was with the shifts and the training and stuff. And I spoke to my doctors about it and they said it wasn't really a realistic career path for me. And then I think it was after that that I then got ill with my mental health problems, and I think that cemented that I wanted to do psychology.
You've made me laugh so much about your wanting to be a bin woman.
Sorry.
No, I love that. And I think, you know, joking aside, I think it's so important to highlight the fact that you don't have to want to do a healthcare, you know, go into healthcare your whole entire life. It's okay if you consider doing other things, including becoming a bin woman.
Definitely. And I think, like, it's kind of better when certain experiences lead you to a profession, if that makes sense. Like, having your own first-hand experience of something gives you such a deeper understanding and empathy for your patients or clients or whatever you want to call them. And I think it just really helps cement that passion, because you've got a reason for doing it that can be personal or it can be from anywhere else. But I know that if it wasn't for my own struggles with mental health, there's no way that I would have been studying psychology.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think if you speak to a lot of healthcare students, I think they'll either have, you know, their own personal health reasons, or, you know, somebody close to them. I think, you know, it's something that I talk about quite a lot, like my experience as a patient. I believe that it will make us all better healthcare professionals. You know, true empathy comes when you can put yourself in the patient's shoes, if you like, I think.
Definitely. And I think they're very, very aware of that in psychology. So obviously I'm just doing an undergrad degree at the moment, but if you go on to do the clinical psychology doctorate, I think you have to have either 30 hours or 50 hours of therapy yourself. And you have to kind of go through that, like, journey of, like, personal growth and psychological treatment, because they want you to understand how it feels to be the person in that chair. And I think without that, you can never really connect with your patients in that way, because you don't really know what the process they're going through is.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so interesting that you say that you have to have your own experience, how many hours of therapy. I've never heard of that. While we're talking about it, could you maybe talk us through what undergraduate psychology involves, and then that clinical doctorate, what that means and how that works?
Sure. So I think a big misconception in psychology, or with psychology degrees, is that you study psychology at undergrad and then you graduate and then you're a qualified psychologist. I wish it weren't like that, but sadly it isn't. After having your undergrad degree, you then have to kind of go off and do various work experience, and that can come in many forms. It can be, you know, being a support worker, being like a special needs teaching assistant, or being an assistant psychologist or wellbeing practitioner or whatever. And then after a few years of work experience, you can then start applying to do the clinical doctorate. And the clinical doctorate is like a PhD. It's a 3-year course. And it's mainly consists of lots of different placements. So you'll be working with different client groups. So this might be, you know, one in children's services, learning disabilities, older adults and dementia, lots of different services. And then you write like your thesis on top of that, which is, oh gosh, I think it's like a 50,000 word research project that you've conducted yourself. Yeah, it's big. But places to get onto that are really, really competitive. So I think there's 700 places in the whole country, but they get thousands and thousands of applicants per year, because it's an NHS funded course, and obviously they'll only fund so many people. So a lot of people try to get onto that for many, many years. I think I spoke to someone the other week who was on her 8th year of applying for it. Yeah, and it involves quite a lot of, like, obviously you have to apply and then do an interview, but it involves like a lot of like reasoning and deductive tests and problem solving stuff as well. But yeah, you can only become like a qualified clinical psychologist once you've done that doctorate. So your psychology degree really is just like the first step. If you complete your psychology degree and it's BPS accredited, which the BPS is the British Psychological Society, and they accredit degrees which they believe give sound psychological understanding and form the basis for like graduate chartered membership. So you can be a member of the BPS without being a clinical psychologist, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. I think that's a really useful piece of information that I didn't know beforehand. So what do you think, there are any other misconceptions about studying psychology?
Yeah, I think there's so many. I think one is that psychology is an easy degree. I think I'm not being biased here, but it's really not. Like, it's a science degree for a reason, and I know the course at Leeds is very scientific. It contains elements of like biology, chemistry, statistics, which I know isn't a science, but also elements of like sociology and philosophy, and it kind of brings everything together. We've done a lot of neuroscience modules, and they have been really, really challenging. And you need like super good English skills as well, as most assessments involve writing essays, and you really have to know how to articulate your point, which is something I'm still working on, to be honest.
Me too, don't worry.
I think another misconception is that psychologists are the same as psychiatrists, and they do sound really similar, but psychiatrists are medical doctors, like they've done a medical degree and then they've gone on to specialise in psychiatry, which is basically medicine for mental health. So they tend to use the medical model and prescribe drugs, whereas psychologists advocate for talking therapies and take a more like humanistic, person-centred approach. That's not to say that they're polar opposites, because they're not. They often work together and in tandem, especially in MDTs. Another misconception, I guess, is that a psychology degree is just about mental health. It's not. If you want to do a degree that is solely about mental health, then I would really recommend doing mental health nursing, because that's where you learn about different psychiatric disorders and formulations and how to do assessments and treatments and things like that. But psychology is more, I guess it's more brain science, so it's about how the brain works, why it does what it does, and studying the mind and human behaviour in the context of how the brain works. And it kind of sees that as the brain's output, if you like, but psychology is kind of studying everything that goes on underneath it. And another misconception, I guess, which is kind of relevant to what you said earlier, but I think there's a big misconception that psychologists can't struggle with their mental health, and that they're always going to be 100% healthy all the time, which is just not true. That's like saying to a doctor that they'll never get a cold or they'll never get the flu. Like, it can happen, we're all human. So being a psychologist doesn't make you perfect. It doesn't mean that you're going to be happy every single day and you're going to be able to cure everyone's problems, because sadly that's not true.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I think a lot of what you've just said makes a lot of sense after you've said it, but I can see how those misconceptions definitely arise. I think the one where you said, you know, psychology isn't all about mental health illness, is really interesting. I think that's, you know, really good piece of advice about doing mental health nursing, if that is what you want to, you know, solely study. So towards the end when you were speaking, you briefly mentioned the MDT, so the multidisciplinary team. How do psychologists, what role do they play within the MDT? Who do they work with closely, maybe?
Sure. So I guess it depends if we're talking about in a general hospital or in a psychiatric hospital, because I guess obviously it's a similar role, but it would be quite different. So in the general hospital, I think psychologists mainly focus on assessing patients. So this can include people who've come in due to mental health related issues, such as suicide attempts or self-harm, or eating disorders, because a lot of the time these people go to or spend time in general hospitals first before being moved to psychiatric hospital, just to make sure that they're physically stable. So doing assessments with them, or assessing anyone on the wards who the nursing team may feel like would benefit from psychological assessment. And then they tend to do a formulation plan, which looks at the presenting problem, maintaining factors, protective factors, and then creating a plan to move forward. but they can also support patients who are struggling with a diagnosis. Like, I know they work quite closely with teams like the cancer team to try and help people come to terms with maybe having terminal cancer and supporting their families as well. I know in children's hospitals they work quite closely with children who are maybe about to have an operation or undergo surgery to try and help them manage their anxiety around that and maybe manage on the other side as well, especially if the operation or surgery has changed their physical appearance, and obviously trying to manage the emotional aspect of being ill is really, really huge. And as well, during the pandemic, kind of providing support for staff who may have seen or experienced distressing things, like working on COVID wards. I know quite a lot of the staff have been through the psychology team, just to kind of talk about how they're feeling and the stress and all that kind of thing, which I think is really beneficial at the moment. In a psychiatric hospital, it's obviously a very similar role in terms of assessments and formulations, but I think they tend to work more, have more regular one-to-ones with people. So generally people stay in psychiatric hospitals for longer. They might be there for several weeks or even months, some people even years. So it's kind of seeing them on a regular basis and maybe doing different forms of therapy with them. And there's loads of different types of therapy that clinical psychologists can practice on people, so I guess it's just like trying a wide variety of approaches and seeing which one the patient responds best to.
Amazing. And I think, yeah, you definitely highlighted something so important, the sort of overlap between physical and mental health. They're definitely not completely separate things.
No, definitely not. And that's something that we really talk about on, like, studying psychology, is how interlinked the brain and the body are. And yeah, it's just really fascinating.
Amazing. So you briefly mentioned your work as a healthcare assistant. Could you tell us all about that, basically? Why, what made you want to be a HCA? What's it like?
Sure. So I became a HCA about a year ago now. I think it was the start of the first lockdown, and I think it was the whole, obviously we saw on the news about how overwhelmed hospitals were and how stressed all the staff were, and I guess I just felt a bit helpless sitting at home not being able to do anything. And some of my friends who are medical students or nursing students were obviously working on the front line and had been, you know, extended their placements or their hours or maybe been redeployed or whatever to help out, and I guess I just thought that I really wanted to do that. Having pretty much zero medical knowledge made me not the best candidate, but I applied anyway and I got in. It took a while to, like, obviously get all the documents and paperwork through, so I started in about June. And I didn't really have much training for it. It was mainly just shadowing and watching the other HCAs. So it was kind of like being thrown in at the deep end. But I really, really enjoy it. I think it's such a rewarding job. So the role of a healthcare assistant varies depending on what ward you're on. But generally it's just assisting the patients with personal care. So this can be like washing, dressing or feeding. It can be taking them down for scans. It can be providing them emotional support or company, especially at the moment when they're not allowed visitors. And yeah, I guess just assisting the nurses to, like, provide that care. Obviously, we can't do drugs or put on IVs or anything. Some trusts allow healthcare assistants to, like, set up liquid feeds and stuff. Some don't, so I guess the role really varies, but I think it's really enjoyable because I know that we get a lot more one-to-one time or just general contact time with the patients than the nurses do. So often we can be that, like, listening ear or sounding board, especially at the moment because no visitors are allowed in hospitals, which I know some patients find quite difficult. So yeah, that's what HCA does.
Amazing. It's so incredible that you took you did that, especially during a pandemic. I can completely understand your motives, but yeah, it's amazing that you took up that completely new role during a pandemic. So you should be so proud of yourself for doing that.
Oh, thank you. I think looking back, going into it in the middle of a pandemic probably was not the best idea, because I remember the first few shifts I was just crying. I felt so overwhelmed. I was like, I literally know nothing. And I remember sitting in my first handover meeting, which is the meeting that like nurses and healthcare assistants have first thing in the morning and last thing at night to kind of update each other about the patients and how they're getting on. And they were just talking in so many acronyms, like everything was like a, you know, a CSW or an ACP or, you know, COPD or all these things. And I was just like, what the heck does that mean? I had no idea. And I felt too silly to ask anyone. So I was just like sitting, Googling things underneath the table as they were talking to try and catch up.
First of all, I have no idea what 2 out of 3 of those acronyms mean, if that makes you feel any better. I know what COPD is, but the other two are lost on me. But I completely agree, even as I've done 3 years of medicine, but trying to read patients' notes and work out what's going on when everything is just written in like 3-letter abbreviations is really difficult. So that's definitely not just you.
I was just going to say, I think that's so important though, because it just highlights that no one knows everything and you don't need to know everything in order to start or do a job. Like, I think a lot of it in healthcare is learning along the way, and from each patient and each day that you do, you learn something new and it just kind of all adds up. And then one day you'll realise that you're actually way more competent you were. Way more competent than you were when you first started. I think definitely don't be put off if you don't know everything. You don't need to know everything. I think the only skills you need to be a HCA really are being empathetic, being caring, and being patient. And yeah, I think empathizing with how it would feel to be a patient, which is obviously a lot easier if you've been a patient yourself or know someone who has.
Definitely. I've got 2 things that I've thought of from that. So the first thing is, having now spoken to lots of different healthcare students through Future Frontline, that's definitely a shared feeling of being sort of apprehensive and maybe not feeling like you know enough, that you're not good enough. So yeah, definitely, like you said, don't let that put you off. Just know that everyone once felt the same, I guess. And the second thing was about being a healthcare assistant. And somebody else actually wrote a blog post on Future Frontline about being a healthcare assistant. I think it was so good, just basically saying that HCAs are like the backbone of the nursing team and I guess kind of can be like the bottom of the food chain.
Definitely. And I think, I don't mean to be rude because I know you're going to be one and I'm sure you won't be like this, but a lot of doctors just seem to really hate HCAs and just think they're like, I don't want to say, I guess they kind of look down on us because obviously we're not trained. We've had no kind of, no formal training, and you don't necessarily need any qualifications to be a HCA. But I think all the nurses are so, so lovely, and you do feel like when you're at work, it really is a team. It's like the healthcare assistants and the nurses, and neither could function without each other. So I think you do definitely have that kind of relationship and rapport with them, especially because a lot of student nurses, and I think becoming more common now is student doctors as well, have worked as a HCA maybe sometime during their degree. So they kind of understand the job role a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got quite a few friends who are medical students who either before they applied have worked as a HCA or while studying medicine. But I can completely imagine that kind of hierarchy thing, which I absolutely hate. And it's one of the reasons why I started Future Frontline. I think hopefully that sort of food chain, as it were, will disappear and be, will go away because I absolutely hate it. And I think, yeah, I think it's just a massive credit to you that I can imagine the work. I've never worked as a HCA, but I can imagine it's really hard work at times as well.
Definitely. I think it's not an easy job. It sounds quite easy when you're saying it, but I think when you have multiple patients to look after, some of which are quite poorly, and you're maybe having to like recheck their observations every 10 minutes and then manage other people's needs. And I think especially at the moment with visitors not being allowed, that really puts a massive extra strain on healthcare staff, just in terms of maybe doing little things like, you know, helping them to the bathroom or getting them a water or little things that the visitors would usually have done, as well as some old people, bless them, like they've been in hospital for months and they've had no visitors or no one to talk to, and they don't know how to work a phone. So sometimes they just want you to have sit and have a chat, and sometimes it's quite hard because if you don't have the time or you've got to take someone down for a scan or go off the ward or whatever, then you don't necessarily have that time to give. And I know I come away a lot thinking, oh God, I didn't do enough to help that person today, or I should have done that, or I forgot to do that. And it's really easy to beat yourself up, but I think I just have to remind myself that all I can do is my best. Like, I've only got one pair of hands and one pair of legs, and I've got a really big heart, and I will try my best to help people, but I can't help everyone as much as I'd like all the time, because it's just not possible.
Yeah, and I feel that sometimes that comes with working within the NHS, especially at the moment, just that sheer time pressure and just feeling like you need four hands and four pairs of legs. I volunteered at a hospital before starting my degree, and I was just making cups of tea and coffee and talking to patients. But one thing that I felt, which maybe you can relate to, is just that, like you're saying about, you know, even more importantly now, talking to patients when they maybe don't have, you know, any visitors or they're not allowed to come in, just that how big that impact actually is on their mood and their health and well-being in general, just that company, you know, especially now that we know about loneliness and the impact of that on people's health.
Definitely. And I think obviously studying psychology, I'm quite aware of this. We covered a study, I think it was last year in one of my modules, and it said that the one biggest predictor of mortality was social connectedness, so how many high quality meaningful relationships you had, and that was more predictive than like your health status or socioeconomic status or where you lived or any of that. Like, it was literally just about the quality of your relationships, because that can literally change and save lives. So I definitely think that, although me sitting having a chat with someone for 10 minutes is not going to change or save their life, I feel that every little bit helps, you know?
It's absolutely improving the quality of their life, which arguably is the most important thing. So if we sort of go back to psychology, say I am studying my A levels at the moment, I'm thinking, Lizzie's persuaded me, I think I want to study psychology. What would be your advice? What did you do to build a strong application? What's your advice for me?
Sure. So I guess I would say really research the different unis and the different courses. If the course is BPS accredited, which I would really recommend having a BPS accredited course if you think you want to go down the clinical psychology route or even for further study, because it shows that the course is of a high standard, and it means that you can qualify for graduate membership with the BPS, which can really help. I would say number one, look at all the different courses and what the modules are that interest you, because psychology is such a broad subject. Like, people think it's just mental health, but it's not. It's so much more than that. So I think looking at different courses, I think if you can And I know it's not easy at the moment, well, it's pretty impossible with COVID, but getting some kind of work experience within mental health or psychology, just to see if you like it, because I think a lot of people have this expectation of what working in mental health is going to be like, or working in psychology will be like, but it's not always the reality. So I definitely think work experience is really valuable. But in terms of building a good application, I think, looking back, I don't even know how I got into uni because my approach was awful, blimmin' heck.
No.
But I don't think they expect you to have loads of experience at that stage. I think with psychology, the main thing they're looking for is passion and why you're interested in it. And that's not to say that everyone applying needs to have had some kind of huge trauma or suffered with their mental health themselves. But I think just conveying why you want to do psychology specifically is helpful. I mean, I didn't apply until I was 22, and I was quite open and honest about my struggles in my application. But I didn't just make it a sob story. I think if you are going to include stuff like that, then focusing on what you learned from them. So I talked a lot about like learning resilience and optimism, time management, stuff like that. So focusing on those kind of skills and why that would make you a good student is really important. And something else I did was talking about your interests. So no matter how big or small they may be, I think I mentioned something really lame about like liking to watch forensic psychology documentaries on Netflix. Like I really liked Mindhunter and like Ted Bundy documentaries, so I mentioned that. And I liked listening to neuroscience podcasts. I was like really interested in that, and I just put that in. And obviously I don't know if it helped or not, but I think it just kind of shows that you're interested in psychology and that it like, you know, expands into your leisure time as well. Yeah, I think it's just focusing on why you want to do it and why you'd be a good student, really.
Amazing. I think that's really good advice. I think that's good advice sort of across the board as well for lots of different healthcare degrees. I think, yeah, like you said, that sort of work experience, which I think of work experience as listening to a podcast or watching a documentary as well, that can really justify, you know, your reasons. And I think sort of talking about the way you described how to talk about your personal experiences with your own health, I think that's really important. I get asked quite a lot, you know, should I put in my personal statement about this X illness, Y illness? And I think your response, if you learn something from it, if you can reflect on it, and if you can show how that will make you a better healthcare professional, I think then go for it. But if it's just a storytelling time, then maybe not.
Definitely. And I think I am such a big advocate, and I harp on about it to everyone all the time, about not being ashamed of your illnesses and not feeling like it's one big secret and you need to hide it. I think your illnesses are probably your biggest strength, because that's where you've learned your most important life lessons. Like, health is such a pillar of your life, and when that gets taken away from you, you have very little to fall back on. So I think including it is never going to disadvantage you. I think you will have learned so many skills from it. And if you're not sure of how your illness has helped you, maybe ask someone else. Like, I asked my mom, because obviously she lived with me through it. She saw me every day, and she was able to say, like, Lizzie, you became so much more of a strong person because of it. Like, you really learned how to pick yourself back up. You learned how to advocate for yourself. You learned so many other things. And I think universities especially, they really see that, and they're not going to think, oh, who's this girl? We're not going to let her in because she got ill. Like, no way, yeah, she's a liability. They're not going to think like that. I think it can only ever work in your favour.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, on the sort of flip side of that, being a patient can teach you so much about healthcare as well, and the different roles within the team. I know even now when I'm a patient, I'm always thinking like, oh, what are they doing? Oh, did I like the way that they did that?
Definitely. I think even if it just helps you by learning what not to do, then that's really helpful in itself.
That's really funny. I had to go for an x-ray the other day and the radiologist didn't introduce themselves and I was like, oh dear, minus a point in your OSCE station.
Literally, oh my gosh.
Great. So if we go back to maybe talking more about you, we talked about the clinical doctorate. What are your plans for the future? Where do you see yourself? What kind of area do you want to go into?
So I know that I want to work in child mental health. I think mm-hmm. I've known this for quite a while. I did some volunteering at my local CAMHS outpatient clinic. CAMHS stands for Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services. So it's basically under 18s, or for some services it's under 25s who are struggling with their mental health. Mm. And these are quite big teams, often comprising of many different roles. So I know I want to work in child mental health. I've done a few shifts as a support worker in a psychiatric hospital, which has been really, really eye-opening and interesting. Mm. But I think what I will probably do is become a children's psychological wellbeing practitioner, which is such a long job title, but it's shortened to being... Yeah, it's shortened to being a PWP because that's a lot easier to say. and it basically involves doing CBT with children who have low-level anxiety or depression, and basically just helping them through that. And I think from there you can then learn higher intensity therapies like family therapy or, you know, higher intensity CBT. And I think it's a good way of kind of getting experience within a mental health setting and being able to work one-to-one with children. I think that'll be really helpful. But I think long term I would really love to be a child clinical psychologist. My passion kind of lies, ironically, because we've just been talking about it, but in working with kids with chronic or terminal illnesses and helping them to accept and come to terms with that and just live and manage chronic illness, because I know from doing it myself that it's very difficult. So I think long term that's what I want to do.
Amazing, that sounds great. Yeah, I think that sort of overlap between physical and mental health is something that personally I'm so interested in too. I know sort of as my experience of being a patient, it was always to do with mental health first. And recently it's more to do with physical health. And I'm like, oh gosh, this really does affect your mental health too.
Having
that firsthand experience is sometimes all you need. So yeah, that sounds amazing.
Oh, thank you.
So will you graduate this year then?
Yes, so in about 2 months I should be done, which is super exciting. I'm still holding out hope for a graduation this summer, but with restrictions and stuff, I don't think anyone's fully sure where we'll be. But yeah, I'm really excited to graduate and just kind of start the next chapter of my life, really, and work. I think studying is great, but I think I'm ready to work now. I'm ready to have social interaction and kind of do something that makes a difference.
Absolutely, and earn some money at the same time.
Oh gosh, yeah, the money would definitely be nice.
Amazing. So thanks so much, Lizzie. That's been really insightful. I think the last question that I'd like to ask you is, what would you tell your, I don't know, 16, 17-year-old self?
About psychology?
About anything. Maybe one to do a psychology and one sort of advice.
I guess I would tell myself that I'm so much more capable than I think I am. Mm. I doubted myself so much about everything, and I was really struggling at the time, and so much stuff that I just did not think I could get through. I think at the time, I hope it's okay for me to say, like, I was suicidal. I just did not see a future for myself. And now I think, and the last few years actually, I've been happier than I've ever been and doing things that I never thought I could do. So I guess I just tell myself that, like, things will get better and that I'm capable of so much more than I think I am. And in terms of psychology, I would say, don't worry about needing to know everything and getting everything perfect, because there's always a chance to learn more. Like, if you don't know it, you can find it out. You don't have to know it all there and then. And that one bad grade, or even several bad grades, do not define you. And if you come out of a degree with a 2-2 or a first, it doesn't mean you're going to be a better or worse psychologist. Like, grades do not define you or how good you will be at a job.
I think both those pieces of advice are something that I wish you told myself when I was 16 too. I think that thing about grades and how good you will be as a professional is so important. Definitely. Important.
I think more so in healthcare, because in my opinion, the main things you need to work in healthcare, which are compassion, empathy, understanding, being caring, all qualities like that, you can't measure on any kind of test. You can't give a grade for those kind of things. So definitely, I think, do not worry about getting a bad grade. If you are adamant that you want to be a doctor or psychologist or midwife or nurse or whatever you want to be, don't let a grade put you off, because the actual job itself is so much more than a grade.
Absolutely. And I'd say that's true for every single healthcare profession there is. You can always go and look up something in a book, or probably on Google more likely. You definitely can't go and look up empathy.
Definitely. And the amount of times I've been sat doing notes and then a nurse has been next to me and looked at a handover sheet and was like, oh, what does that mean? And then Googled it. And these are qualified nurses. So don't, and I'm sure it's the same for doctors, like, as a doctor, you can't possibly know every single medical condition in the entire world.
Oh gosh, well, I really hope not, because I definitely can't.
Exactly. So don't worry about that. Like, it's the same, you learn something new every day, which is so cheesy, but even doctors who've been doing it for like 40 years still probably learn something new every day.
Absolutely, completely agree. Well, thank you so, so much, Lizzie, for speaking to us and educating us about a career in psychology. It's been really, really interesting. I know that I've learned so much, and I'm sure everyone else listening has learned so much too.